Greetings, this is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. We've got another great show tonight. We've got Brooks Agnew, and Brooks is a world explorer, researcher, innovator, entrepreneur, writer, speaker, and radio show host. His BBS radio show, X Squared Radio, airs on BBS Radio on Sundays from 5 to 8 p.m. I've been on his show quite a few times. It's a great show. His most recent book is entitled Remembering the Future, The Physics of Souls and Time Travel, which is quite interesting. We'll talk a lot about that. We're having trouble hooking up with Brooks, but I'm sure he'll be on the line here shortly. I know communications is getting harder and harder with, you know, all the coronal mass ejections going off and the X-flares and the storms generated by these X-flares and the sun's activity. So it's getting harder and harder to connect up with people, and especially over the internet. I mean, the internet's usually the first to go when you start having problems with the grid, you know, and then the phones kind of hang in there, but the power goes, and then any phones that are in need of being plugged in or whatever just aren't going to work. So basically, it's real important to get yourself one of those old phones that doesn't need to be plugged in, you know, that you just plug in the you know, the phone cord and that's it, you know, runs off its own power, because that way you can stay in touch, you know, and, you know, when things go down. But, you know, we've had power outages here, but the phones worked. And as long as we didn't have to plug our phones and they continued. But we are in for some changes. I'm going to ask Brooks when we get him on a few questions. We've had some crazy things happen up here at the ranch. I mean, even crazier than normal. So, I mean, normally we see UFOs all the time. We have masters appear and you name it. It's pretty crazy. But, you know, it's getting even weirder up here now. I'm not sure if we've got Brooks on the line here. Looks like we're trying to get him on the line. We're almost there. Nope, haven't got him on the line yet. We're still working on that. But we've observed some things here. And for those of you who haven't been to ESETI and don't know what it's about here, we live in Trout Lake, Washington. And the skies are clear most of the time because we're east of the Cascades. So we're on more of the desert side where the forest turns to desert. And it's just a beautiful place. It's like the land time forgot. But unfortunately, looks like a lot of the loggers are finding it and really wreaking havoc on the place. I'm not against logging. I think we should shelter cut, you know, but in this clear cutting stuff, it looks like Godzilla walked through our neighborhood now. But there's no reason why we can't maintain a forest and have lumber too, which is using a little common sense. But the problem with that is common sense just isn't too common anymore. You know, greed and unbridled greed, basically, and ignorance has taken its place. And that's what we're seeing around the world. But anyway, what we've been seeing here is some of the constellations, the Milky Way galaxy, the Milky Way, basically, when you look up and see the Milky Way, has been shifting a lot. And I know it shifts a little bit every year, you know, just due to changes, you know, through the seasons, but this is much bigger. I mean, we're talking the Milky Way going from north to south, you know, a little off of north, to going east and west, and then back again in an hour. So some pretty crazy things. And I've had multiple witnesses come on. I said, look at this, look at which way the Milky Way is going. It's not supposed to be going that way. And the next thing you know, an hour later, we come out and look, and it's back where it should be. Some pretty crazy things going on. But anyway, we're watching, you know, the Big Dipper and the Pleiades and the Orion constellations moving as well, and as well as Jupiter not being where it should be. So, and then moving back again. So we're definitely in some kind of a wobble. I don't know anybody better to talk to than Brooks about that when he comes on the air. But we have some kind of a wobble effect going, and you know, the Earth is actually being pulled either by some object going through, or it's just the regular wobble that gets bigger and bigger as time goes. But we are definitely in, you know, a major wobble effect. It's pretty undeniable. Most of us were aware of this. We knew this was going to come, but it's interesting now that it's here and you see it. It's kind of a mind blower looking up and seeing the Milky Way not being where it's supposed to be, and moving that much. But anyway, you know, I know a lot of people going, "What are you smoking up there?" You know, like, you know, you're not educated into astronomy, or there can, you know, a lot of scientists are gonna come off. But Brooks is a scientist, and he can probably shed a little light on this area. But it's very clear, you know, that there is a major hiccup or a wobble going on, and being outdoors and out watching the skies like we do 24/7, you know, basically, you know, we're outdoors out, you know, busting wood, and at nighttime we're out watching the ongoing UFO activity here and watching ships coming in and out of the mountain. So we spend a lot of times outdoors in nature, so we're very tuned into nature and tuned into the skies, and any changes are observable. A lot of the Native Americans up in Alaska are very aware of this, and they've been talking about how they have, you know, extra hours now because of something going on. The sun is not rising and setting where it's supposed to, and there's some major changes in the sky, and you know, they're watching a lot of crazy melt off going, and you know, some severe climate changes there. So basically, you know, positions are changing, the Earth's wobbling, something's going on, and it'd be nice to dig into this and find out exactly what it is. There's a few other things going on. I know that it's not just the Earth wobble, but we're seeing major social, economic changes going on, and with a lot of these movements. And I think it's very important when we do these movements to look at who is pushing these movements, you know, the Occupy Wall Street and things like that. And there are people playing on a growing resentment and basically a lot of anger and things like that, which is earned, basically. I mean, when you lose your house and your job and you've got no future and you've got a family and things like that, you know, I would be extremely angry. When all the jobs have been exported and everything else, and people do have a really good good gripe going there, you know, on a world level. But we need to really focus on who's responsible for this. You know, we always, you know, pluck away at the dragon's claws and its feet, and we have to look at the head of the dragon and who's really behind this, and be very careful too, because some of these movements are trying to be triggered into violence, and they would just love that. They would love to create martial law, bring in their new rules and regulations, clamp down on everybody, and pretty soon you won't be able to grow your own gardens, you won't be able to hunt, you won't be able to do anything. Hunt, fish, grow your own food, nothing. It'll be all illegal, and everything will be automated, and they'll have massive Franken farms, and it'll just go on and on, because that is the program. They want total control over everything. You know, your food, your, you know, what you watch, you know, the airwaves, the radio waves, the TV waves, everything. They want total control, and I don't think that's going to happen. But we really need to focus on who's really behind this and go there, you know, because the people behind this, the few people, you know, there's just a few families running the whole show here. And basically they're sitting back laughing at this whole thing until it becomes personal. And I know there's a lot of people there out there that were laughing at a lot of these movements and laughing at the conspiracy people and everything else and saying what a joke it is until it became personal. And it had to become personal before them to wake up and smell the coffee and take a really good look at what they're participating in and what they're being involved in and how they are supporting a system, you know, which is very barbaric. It's a very barbaric system. So, you know, hopefully we can come up with a new system and walk away from the old system. You know, I'm not expounding any violence or anything else, but we need to just stop participating on every level with this system and create a new system, a system that's fair with an even dispersal of wealth, you know, where everybody's working together in harmony with each other and the planet and working towards you know, resource management basically versus, you know, and sharing versus, you know, profit and greed and all the other things that are running the country. Because we have plenty of resources. We have plenty of food. We have all the fuel we need. We have fuelless energy technologies. We have healing technologies beyond your imagination. We have all these technologies. And if we started employing these technologies and you know, using more of a, you know, more even robotic systems and providing some of the basic needs that we need, we could be building things that weren't, you know, planned obsolescence. They would last for a long time, almost forever. It would free all of our time up. We could get creative. We could get into art. We could study. We could read. We could meditate. We could wake up, and there wouldn't be any lack. But we've been so programmed for lack that you know, it's just the way it is. There's just this ongoing program for lack, you know, going on, manufactured lack and planned obsolescence. And you've got to have things break down so you can make more things and newer things. And, you know, it just goes on and on. But it's a system that's self-serving, and it's a system that cannot continue. The earth can't sustain it anymore. And so this system is not going to continue. And it's really on its way out. But we shouldn't get into fear around this. We should just start looking at creating a new system. You know, create a system where everybody is equal. You know, create a system where, you know, we have the best of the best giving, you know, in service to society and you know, doing, you know, that's the bottom line. We got to get back to service. Yeah, we got to get away from this me program and the unity consciousness wave that's going through and the alignment with the galactic plane and all the other higher dimensions coming in. You know, all of this is actually pushing us in that direction. So it's very important, you know, to start getting to know your neighbors, work with your neighbors, start working together, let go of the me mind program, the fear. You know, you're not going to be able to pull through everything, you know, when the changes come, because you're going to need your neighbors. You're going to need to work together. And that's just the way it is. But we do see some major changes in the works, definitely major social economic changes, and following some earth changes with the ever-expanding solar cycle, the expanding earth wobble. Everything else is pointing in that direction. So before we get the, you know, the fear and the doom and gloom and all the other people flipping out, you know, saying we're preaching fear, we're not preaching fear. This is science. This is statistics. You know, this is just what is. It's what's unfolding. And, you know, basically, you know, it's just the way it is. You know, we're really hoping we can get Brooks. If anybody has a hotline to Brooks, we're having trouble getting a hold of him. I don't know what happened to Brooks. He may have been caught in one of those crazy storms or winter storms or whatever, but hopefully we can get him on the show. I know, you know, I try to make every show. Every time I've been asked to go on a show, I do everything I can to make it. And I actually missed one show a while back, and it was just a glitch in communication and not writing things down and things like that. So basically, you know, I was out doing my thing, you know, gathering wood for the winter and totally missed a radio show. And this is probably my karma coming home, but, you know, who knows, you know. But anyway, we can have a good time anyway. We can also open it up to callers and, you know, we can get the lines up to call. Unfortunately, I don't have the numbers with me, but we'll get those up for you. If you go to the website, we can go ahead and see what we can get. You know, see what we can get going here. But looks like Brooks is incommunicado, but it's not a problem. We can just continue and you know, hopefully get some call-ins. We can snag that. If the producer can pop up those call-in numbers, we can go ahead and call out for anybody that wants to call in and talk about just about anything. But, you know, we have a a few other people we could bring online here. I'm trying to think of who we could grab at a moment's notice, but I would rather just have people call, you know, call into the show and see what we can get. We're going to go ahead and give that. Looks like we've got Chris on line three, I believe. Chris, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. The phone number is 530-413-4522.
Oh, great. Thanks. I know we've got an 800 number there, too. I've got to grab that one. And
that would be 888-627-6008.
Awesome. Thank you. Hey, you want to be my producer?
No, that's okay. You're doing a great job as it is.
Great. But anyway, do you have something to say? Or?
I just wanted to know, with regards to the sun and all the energy and the photons coming from the sun, I can feel it. When I go outside, of course, I get sunburned faster, which is not very good. But I also feel a tremendous amount of energy. And when I just stare at the blue sky, just staring at it, suddenly I see all these white, it looks like butterflies or birds or something, and they're not there, but I just see this energy in the sky. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, I have. A lot of us call that electrum. You see these little squigglies everywhere, and little lights. And what I was told is that's electrum, and that's the stuff things are made of in the vibrational continuum. That things go from consciousness to light to energy to mass, and what you're seeing is the electrum or the energy before it becomes mass, the usable energy to create with. Actually,
that's incredible. And I know you've said on your show many times that there's a lot more energy coming into Earth at this time. Where would one go to see or monitor, gather that kind of research?
There's a woman named Susan. God, I'm trying to think of her name. Renison, I believe. She talks a lot about it. She's an astrophysicist, and it's amazing what she talks about. And she says that at one time we were getting at the maximum maybe 50 bursts of energy that were hitting the Earth a day. And now it's over 500. And so we're getting these massive, cosmic rays, gamma rays, all these energy bursts hitting the planet right now. We're moving through a highly energized place in space. And, it's measurable, basically. They've been measuring it for a while, and we are moving into alignment with galactic plane, and there's going to be a lot of gravity waves and higher energies coming through. And it's really hard on people when these energies come in, because I notice people are having all kinds of aches and pains and headaches and can't sleep and getting really agitated with these energies. And we really need to learn to just flow with these energies and rest when we need to rest, take a break, meditate more, be in a position of surrender. You know, surrender the past, release the past, any old wounds and traumas or wrong conclusions from past experiences. We need to be in a space where, you know, we don't have to defend our egos anymore or try to be right. You know, all this energy is creating these scenarios, and people just need to learn to become observers and, you know, focus on that love and joy and bliss and let that lift you, you know, in through the process, basically.
Well, thank you for that. I'm going to try and implement some of that in my lifetime as well, my life here, sorry. one other thing, I noticed a lot that I'm waking up at 3:33 in the morning. Doesn't matter what time I go to bed. I just get up. It's like someone throws me out of bed at 3:33 every morning, and I can't just figure out what's going on.
Well, I'll tell you what's interesting is we live on a vortex here, and so it's like an acupuncture point for the planet. There's really high energy here, and so whenever there's a lifting going on, a vibrational lifting or a shift happening, we feel it here like tenfold, and it's intense. And a lot of times what I've noticed between there's two things going on. One, between 12 and 1 is the time that, you know, a lot of the dark arts are going on, the voodoo boys and, you know, the psychotronic stuff is happening because they like to play with that energy. And that's coming from space platforms and satellites and all kinds of things, you know, where they're playing with that stuff. But it seems around 3 in the morning, between 3 to 5 is the real spiritual hour. That's when things really happen. And the earth is the clearest, you know, because the psychic turbulence isn't there. Most people are asleep and it's, you know, the higher dimensions are really working hard, you know, during those time periods to help people wake up. And they do like love feedings, power feedings, vibrational liftings around that time period. And a lot of people who are sensitive are waking up and just being totally wide awake and really hard time getting back to sleep. And that's because they're being worked with on higher levels.
That's incredible. Well, thank you for that. James, you're doing an unbelievable job helping humanity. And I just wanted to say thank you on behalf of everyone for all that you do.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
I'm really hoping we can get these numbers posted up. I can go over to the website and bring those up. But the one thing that I've noticed that we've noticed here intensely is that we are, you know, really feeling the heat of the solar flares, the impacts. You know, all of that, it's coming in really strong. And so basically, you know, we just have to learn to ride the waves, ride the shifts as the energy's coming in and hang out with it. There's really nothing else we can do. You know, we just have to stay with it. But hopefully we can get some more call in. So if anybody wants to call in and talk about how you've been feeling during these shifts and what's up and how the shifts are affecting you and maybe some other topics. It looks like we've got Brooks on the line. Brooks, are you with us?
Yes, I am with you. Hi, James.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Sorry, I missed our 8 o'clock appointment, but now I'm here.
No problem. You know, I can't think of anybody better. We already did your intro and everything, but I can't think of anybody better to ask a few questions, and then we can get into whatever you want to talk about. But we've got people calling in and asking questions, and I have some questions too. And one thing that we've noticed here, and I have multiple witnesses, and we weren't drinking or smoking anything, but we went outside one night, and we were looking at the Milky Way, and it was in its usual place, you know, going pretty much north and south in its usual place. So we would go in, we come back out an hour later, we look up, and it's going almost east and west. And you know, I go, that is weird. And all of a sudden the dipper is not where it usually is. And I go, this is really weird. This is really bizarre. And there's three of us that looked at it. And so we went inside the house, you know, and got a cup of tea and we're talking inside for a little while. And then we came back out another hour later and it was back where it was supposed to be.
Wow.
So, could that be the Earth wobble? Did we just go through a major hiccup or something?
Well, I don't think so. I know that depending on what time of night it is, the Milky Way, it will be aligned north and south as opposed to east and west because, you know, the Earth is, you know, rotating and the only star that doesn't move is the North Star. The rest of the stars rotate around with it. If you at least here on the East Coast, when you go right to bed at sundown, you can see Cassiopeia in the sky. But when you wake up at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning and go outside, it's Orion that's in the sky. So the stars do rotate around the heavens, but it takes longer than an hour. takes longer than
yeah, I know. And what's weird is it went back to where it was. It was weird. I mean, we all looked at it. And I go, "I guys notice anything different?" I said, "Look where the Milky Way is." And they go, "Wow, that's not supposed to be there. It's not supposed to be going that direction." And they do, you know, we know they do rotate and things rotate, but it seemed to be some kind of a hiccup or a weird little glitch or wobble. You know, maybe some object went cruising by and kind of, you know, slid the Earth a little bit and let it bounce back.
Well,
I have no idea.
We have a YU-55. It's supposed to be arriving on Tuesday. JPL's been telling us for a couple of months now that it was going to come some 200,000 miles from Earth, which is closer than the Moon, but it's not going to come exactly between the Moon and the Earth. It's more going on a parallel course of the Moon and the Earth, sliding by. And I heard that number again this morning, that it's going to be some 221,000 miles away. And I'm just wondering why that number has changed in the last 90 days, that this asteroid's been traveling through space, being tugged this way and that way by various bodies. It's about 1,500 meters across, which is a pretty good-sized rock. You won't be able to see with the naked eye, but you will be able to see with a telescope if you know where to look. But still, that's a pretty close pass by an asteroid that size.
Yeah, now I heard, Richard Hoagland went on Revolution Radio and somewhere else, I guess he announced that that it's actually going to slam into the Moon.
Wow, that's pretty bold to come out and say something like that. If it did slam into the Moon, it would definitely ruin our day, I will tell you that.
Yeah, I'm wondering what would happen. I mean, this is pretty big. And if something that big smacked into the Moon, I mean, it would definitely, you know, make a real mess of the Moon. But I wonder how that would affect us with gravitational forces and would it knock the Moon, you know, out of orbit a little bit? Or what, do you think it has that potential?
Yeah, I mean, something that dense, we don't really know how much it weighs, but we know that it's, 13 to 1,500 meters in diameter. Which is a good sized rock. Now, the Moon is so critical to life on the Earth. In fact, it has been put forward by many anthropologists and planetary geologists that if it wasn't for the Moon, there would be no life on the Earth, not as we know it anyway. The tides, the seasons, the movement of the stratosphere, all of that. Pumping action, all that tidal gravity that stretches and squeezes the Earth every 24 hours on a 28-day cycle is what makes life move on this planet. It's really, the perfectly engineered body for the working of an Earth. It's a single Moon in a position like that. It could not have. I mean, it's possible it could have happened by accident. But on the other hand, you can say that it's virtually impossible to have an Earth-like planet around a sun unless you have a Moon. So all Earths at this distance around the sun that have life will have a Moon like ours. Mm-hmm. So if something knocked it out of the way, it would definitely have an effect on all life.
So we'd be mainly everything would just become a stagnant pond, you know, with all these forces and just a big... big bacterial soup.
Yeah, because there'd be no pump to move nutrients and life around the planet. So that's you're exactly right. It would just become, stagnant and maybe not lifeless, but it wouldn't be as interesting as it is now.
Yeah, there'd be definitely a lot more swamp land and things of that nature without the movement. That was kind of interesting. Now, I didn't hear it myself, but I got several emails on it, and I got emails from Revolution Radio where he came on and supposedly said it was supposed to impact the Moon. But, you know, who knows? That's quite a bold statement, but you never know. You know, there are people.
Well, that probably ruined his chances to become the next director of NASA.
Yeah, that which seems to be his goal. But join the Liars Club, you know. But it's so funny. I always think about that. You know, why would you hold up a badge, you know, a NASA badge, as a way of proving your credibility when they have no credibility? I mean, especially in the field of ufology and things like that. And I know firsthand, I mean, I've had people here, I can't really talk about it, but I've had people here from NASA, and they come here and they see the ships, you know, all the alphabet agency has seen the ships, and the people that are actually on call, you know, have come here. So they know the UFOs are here. They know, you know, but you know what I found? I was really interested in trying to find out what they really do know, and I'm surprised how much they don't know.
Maybe they do know, but they don't admit to it. That's one of the most disappointing things about NASA is the lack of imagination. I was going to say the lack of dream. You know, back when Kennedy first tasked NASA to go to the moon in the 1960s, we had a NASA that would dream. We had a NASA that would reach out into the unknown, that would solve problems. And, you know, we didn't even have microelectronics in that day, and we made it to the moon. We just don't have that imagination in that agency anymore. It's just not there.
Well, it depends on which agency. If you talk about the Black NASA or the Secret NASA program, they've got all kinds of ingenuity, and they've got all kinds of counter-gravity, anti-gravity toys, and they can go pretty much anywhere they want. But the other NASA, you know, when you talk to a lot of the people, a lot of them are in the dark. I mean, everything's compartmentalized, and they are given a project and to build a part of a tool or a toy or whatever they're going to send up. And that's what they focus on, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of communication between, you know, the compartmentalized aspects of NASA.
Well, I have to say I very much agree with you that if there really is a black ops, if we really do have anti-gravity drive, if we really do have interplanetary and maybe even interstellar travel abilities, to keep that secret from the world, for what purposes? To, you know, for military advantage, for, you know, what in the world could they think would be an advantage of value to keep that secret from a planet? It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, yeah, to me basically, if you look at the war industry, basically, you know, whoever has the best technology usually wins the war. You know, that's the way it works. And so technology is power. And if you have the highest technology, you even have power over even the war industry. You know, those guys, you have even higher toys you can come and play with. So it does make sense to me that the elite would not want any of these technologies to get into the wrong hands, because it's already in the wrong hands, theirs.
Exactly.
So to me, that if you equate power to the, you know, put power in the equation, and there are people that, you know, seek power at any expense, that's their whole thing. They just want wealth and power, you know, and, you know, they don't care. They don't give a damn basically about the planet or the people. It's just all about me and mine. It does totally make sense, you know, when you look at it that way.
Well, the question is, you know, who is me and mine? Does the president really know what the abilities of NASA are? Does he really direct NASA? Obviously he's able to cut the budget of NASA. And is this just the public NASA? Is this just the Steven Spielberg NASA? Or is this, you know, does he really control the funds to the black ops as well? Does he even know about the black ops?
You know, it's interesting. I think, you know, maybe Eisenhower might have been the last one that really knew what was going on. I don't know who after that, but you know what? From my understanding, is that the guys in Black Ops thing see politicians as, you know, they're only going to be there 4 years, or these other guys are there for life. You know, so they said, why should we muck up the waters with somebody that's just going to be there 4 years and is probably going to leave and write a book and spill the beans later? You know, it's better just to leave as an unknown.
Who are these people that are taking all this information to them, all this information with them to the grave? You know, I was interested in Dr. Edgar Mitchell. Recently, mm-hmm. he was forced by the government to turn over one of the cameras that was used in the Apollo mission that he was on. He was trying to sell the camera for, you know, a pretty good amount of money, not a huge amount. I think it was like $60,000, which is about what it was worth. And, you know, evidently the government found out about it and they demanded to have the camera back. They didn't want it in the hands of private collectors. But I thought that was interesting that, you know, here was a credible astronaut, you know, last man to walk on the moon. Here he is with a NASA artifact, and he's trying to sell it, you know, for money. And certainly Edgar Mitchell, at least in these last days of the survivors of the Apollo missions, is probably the most famous astronaut of them all. He's not the one that the administration marches out all the time when they have some NASA move to make, you know, Neil Armstrong or Buzz Aldrin. But Edgar Mitchell has certainly turned what we thought was mainstream space travel on its ear in mm-hmm. the last 5 years.
Yeah, he's definitely revealed a lot. I believe he was the one that they were actually filming or testing some jet or something, some supersonic jet there. I guess a UFO came down and landed right next to him and sat there for a while on the ground, and they filmed it. They got everything on film because they were there to film this jet. And so they got excellent footage of this UFO, and all of a sudden it retracted its gear, went up and just zipped off, you know, at hyperspeed. And I guess they took the camera and the film and never heard about it again. But it'd be great to, you know, get a hold of that footage or have somebody leak that out.
Doesn't that just drive you nuts? I want to know when Edgar Mitchell's coming to the ranch.
Yeah, you know, almost everybody else has. I mean, you've been there. Dr. Bob Salas, you know, he was at Maelstrom where they shut down the bases there. You know, they shut down all the nukes there and actually just tossed the lids, these massive iron lids off of the silos there, and shut down all the, and there's a lot more to that story. He was here and he had some amazing sightings while he was here. You know, I'm trying to think of who hasn't been here. Both the exopolitics, actually all the exopolitics people have been here that are in exopolitics.
Right.
You know,
Michael Ballas, Alfred Rent, Lambert Weber, all those people have been there. You know, nobody that I know of, as many years as I've been coming to the ranch, has left the ranch disappointed.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing. And you look at the quality of people that have come to the ranch. I mean, Wendell Stevens was here. I can go on and on. I was thinking of all the different people that have been here. Bob Dean, you know, was here and just had a great time. Saw the ships.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, yeah. That was amazing.
And we really connected. You know, when I talked to him, we were like cosmic buds, you know. We shared a lot and a lot of intimate information about our experiences and very similar experiences, how it ties into a more spiritual nature, you know, the higher nature of ufology. So, you know, I thought that was interesting. But there are a few that are really in the they're in the mainstream and they don't want to come. They don't. I mean, even Hannity, Sean Hannity came out with Fox News. He brought a news crew out, you know. So that's pretty amazing. You know, you can't get more conservative than that. But
Oh, that really is amazing. Did Sean leave shaking his head too?
Well, you know, they brought a crew out here, and they were gonna do a thing on it and do a story on it. And I think they're just gonna try to cover it and just say, yeah, well, you know, this guy's making claims and whatever, you know. And then they got here, and then the ship started flying, and the cameraman. Then there's a woman here too, the reporter that was here, and everything. And she just goes, "Holy crap, you know, this is real." And they kept coming in and just powering up and lighting up the whole sky, and so they had quite a show. And they, it's like a lot of people come here to do a spoof in a way or try to debunk it. And once they come here and see that the ships are here, it totally alters their whole reality. And then they have to go back and tell the network that, hey, it's real, it's happening, you know. And so they had the, from then on, they try to sanitize it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I, it's hard to come away from the ranch, you know, there at the base of Mount Adams in Washington State, and leave there a non-believer. And I hate to use the term belief, you know, because I'm a scientist, you know that, and I'm not, yeah. I'm not the kind of person that says, you know, I believe in this or don't believe in that. I either know this or I don't know it, or I have hypothesis and experiment and we go for data. And, you know, I had always hoped to see something like that. But every time that I come up there, you just almost can't go to bed at night because your neck is craned back looking at the sky and there's so much activity.
Yeah, we went out the other night for 20 minutes. And we counted almost 30 ships come over, and we were only there 20 minutes, and two massive power-ups where they just lit the whole sky up. Right now we're getting snow up here. It's just started snowing, so the skies are pretty cloudy. There's a lot of snow clouds up there, so we can't really see much. But, you know, as soon as we get clear sky, we walk out, and, boy, they're there, you know, and they're coming on a regular basis. And what's interesting is that, you know, using the scientific method, you know, we get J-Tracker and Heavens Above, and we double check and make sure we're not looking at ISS or Genesis or that X, whatever, 155, I can't remember the name, or Evastat or any of the major satellites. Yeah. Yeah. We check on that, you know, we make sure that these are unknown, that they're not a known satellite or iridium flares or anything else. And what's odd too is that And every once in a while we'll go out and there's nothing. I mean, we might see one satellite go over. So if these were all satellites, they would be there every night.
Satellites don't make turns in the sky.
Yeah.
And you know, when we come out there and we see two flying in parallel across the sky, and then one will just veer off and go another direction. Uh-huh. Or they'll come from opposite directions, and they'll cross paths in the sky. That's the, you know, we don't have orbits like that.
No. I love these massive triangles we filmed where they actually turn up and reverse and do a 180 or go back the other way. And you know, I had a guy that worked on those projects here, and I showed him the footage, and he goes, "That's not the NOS satellite. That's not the triple satellite." Because, matter of fact, that experiment didn't really work. They said when you have three satellites like that moving together, they have a tendency to move straight up and down. You know, they won't keep flying as a level triangle, that just because of gravitational forces or whatever, they always move up, straight up and down. And
right.
Yeah. And he said,
well,
when
are we going to have a landing? When are we going to make a landing up there where it just, you know, makes the whole world stand,
you know, we're having, you know, experiences here for those with the eyes to see. We're having some interdimensional things going on that are just out of this world, but few people are aware of what's really going on and happening because they haven't risen to the occasion. But I think we're very close to some major landings, but I think a lot of the contacts and the landings are going to be happening in other countries, mainly because we either shoot them down or fire on them, or we go incarcerate the people and take their property and throw them in jail, you know, and fine them, what is it, $5,000? I can't remember what it is, you know, in this country. So until that nonsense ends, I don't think they're going to be landing, just because they don't want the karma of all the problems that would be created after landing. And they're definitely not going to land on the White House lawn, you know, that, you know, the old saying.
No intelligent life there.
Yeah, no intelligent life. So you know, basically, you know, where they are going to be working with people is that people who are very service oriented, very spiritual, that, you know, with loving hearts and you know, pure intentions and open minds, those are the people they're going to be contacting, because that's the only people they can work with.
Yeah, you know, there are a couple of camps out there on UFOs. Mm-hmm. One is that they are occupied by intelligent life, and that intelligent life is benevolent. It's here to mm-hmm. help, here to explore, here to observe. And the other is that it's occupied and they're malevolent. That they're here to take over the world. They're here to eat our brains. You know, they're here for a hybridization program. And it's funny because it's you know, like when I talk to L.A. Marzulli, you know, all UFOs are bad. All aliens are bad. You know, they're here to possess us. They're, you know, there's only one God, and God didn't create them. And so, you know, he's an enemy. And, you know, that's the attitude. But then others that I talk to, they're benevolent. They get a great feeling of peace, of love. Their minds are open. Their tolerance is open. Their propensity for peace is enhanced. You know, I are there really two different factions up there? Are there good guys and bad guys?
Well, you know, this is the way I understand it, basically, is that there have been some malevolent factions here, and they've been here forever. I mean, even the Egyptians knew about them, and they fit into the category of the Archons, that they called them. And they are in the astral level. They're fourth dimensional beings that would pop in and out, and very manipulative. Some of the Greys and some of the reptilian races are involved in that. And there's actually depictions of them, you know, in ancient past, and the Greeks knew about them. And a lot of people know, anybody that's really studied any of the dark arts or know about them, because, you know, in the satanic rituals and everything else, they call upon these beings for power. That, you know, the elite of the elite on this planet actually call on them, and they have their rituals and their, you know, their sacrifice of care over at the Bohemian Grove.
Hey, Brooks. Hi, everyone. Don't worry about it. Just keep talking. I'll bring them back. You're on.
Okay. Well, you know, that's what I see. You know, you see in the ancient Druidism, or you'll see in the wars that they fought between the Romans and the Gauls and the Moors and all that. You see legends of giants or offworlders or flying machines or flying discs or flying wings. And typically those things are involved in some kind of conflict with mankind. We were just reading about the Vimanas again today, going over that information. And I said to myself, you know, how come we haven't broken into some mountainous garage or some underground cavern and found one of these Vimanas parked, or something they left behind, you know, some
the person
some
whom you're trying to reach is
an engine or something left behind in a cave or a cavern or a mountain. Somewhere on this planet, some of that technology has been left behind. We certainly see the carvings on the wall. We certainly see the paintings. We certainly see the works of art that tell a story, just exactly like what you're talking about, James, that some of these beings were here and they were involved in ancient conflict of man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm back. I got cut off there for a second.
That's all right. We carried on. You know, some of these ancient beings are involved in conflict, and some of them are involved in great enlightenment, you know, like the Shining Ones.
Exactly. And I think that's a very sad thing, because now this is what I've experienced, and I've been kind of holding back on this, and I don't want to give details because I don't want to be, you know, throwing stones, but there are a lot of people in ufology that are there for a different, you know, reason, a completely different reason. And, you know, what I've seen is that, you know, a lot of the, you know, Navy intelligence are the ones that are funding most of these black projects. So you look at military intelligence, you look at NSA, some of the major reporting centers actually are NSA operatives, and it's very well known. You go through and look at the major UFO groups, you know, that have the big conferences and everything. Look at the board members, track them back. Some of them are bragging how the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers have a great, bold new plan for us, and we need to start working with them. They're here to enlighten us. And, you know, they've gone forward and made statements like that. And then they, on their thing, they say no new world order on their paraphernalia or whatever, on their advertisements. So, you know, if you do the research and really look at who's who in the field and look at who is playing the very, very dark agenda, that it's all negative, it's all dark, it's all, you know, it's all, we need to beef up the war industry, we need to beef up the black projects because we've got a war that we have to deal with. Take a really good look at the background of these people, and you'll see that the ufology is not what you think it is at all. It's very, very infiltrated, and there's so much disinformation in there. And because there's so much disinformation, there's some really good people in there that are quoting the disinformation, thinking it's truth, not even knowing that they're part of the process. So, because it's been going on for so long. But, you know, it's sad because they want to keep it all nuts and bolts. They want to keep it all negative, you know, keep the fear victim program going, and they want to keep it far away. You know, it's always far away. It's some light in the sky that, you know, Farmer Bob saw when he was feeding his pigs, or it's always some, you know, it's always really far away. They really don't want to bring it, or it's in the past. Basically, it's back in Roswell or whatever. They don't want to bring it into the here and now. That's the last thing they want to do is bring it here and now. And also, they don't want to admit that there are, you know, watchers. There's very spiritually and technologically advanced beings that have been watching us for a long time, kind of as cheerleaders, trying to get us to make the right choices and move in the right direction. And there's been some other malevolent ones that are very manipulative, and they're trying to manipulate us down the wrong path. And these other guys are serving that purpose by keeping the fear and the negativity going. And even the religious, you know, you have to transcend all culture and religious barriers to understand this, because, you know, these beings see the creator in all creation. They've transcended all those separative beliefs that's not part of their reality. And they're very peaceful. They operate under universal law. And that's why a lot of them haven't intervened or interfered, because they honor the right to free will. There's been a prime directive, but that's coming to an end right now. And, you know, the gloves are off right now, and a major cleanup is underway.
Well, yeah, that's a lot of information. I see that, you know, there are websites out there, and there are individuals out there who have more or less taken, I hate to even use this word, they've taken ownership, they've taken authorship of the whole UFO picture. And, you know, they've made the claim that there aren't any races on the earth that they don't know about, that they're the ones that are being contacted by all these races. And the interesting thing is, when you ask them, well, how many races are there actually on the earth? And some of them will say, well, there's anywhere from 50 to 200 races on the planet. Well, that's a big gap, you know. Is it 50 or 51? 51 or 52? And you know, in alphabetical order, you know, who are they? Where did they come from? Why are they here? How long have they been here? Where are they residing? Why they are here? Do they leave and come back? Or have they been here always? You know, mm-hmm. have they been here longer than man? Or are they recent arrivals? They don't know any of those answers. But boy, you try to tell them that there's a race on this planet that they don't know about, and you got a fight on your hand. Because there's this...
Oh, yeah.
There's this, yeah, and I mean, you know, I've heard them in this genre. And, you know, I have to say I'm a little disappointed because I have always said that they're as present as they want to be. If they want to come down out of the skies and land and talk to us, they will. If they want to just float in the skies of New York over there and tease our cameramen with being up there at 10 or 20,000 feet and as a bright light in the middle of the day, that's all they're going to do. If they want to be present, they certainly have the technology and the ability to be present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've had people come here. It's really interesting. And it also goes in another direction, too, where they'll make a contact with some being. And some being will say his name. And he's from whatever, Venus, you know, or somewhere. And they'll say, well, do you know this guy? You know, and I'll go, sorry, I haven't heard of him, you know, and they go, well, I can't believe you haven't heard of him. You're not connected, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot of people on Earth I haven't met yet, you know, so it's a big universe. And I said, I only talk about my experience and what I've experienced. And I've met some crazy beings out there. I met, you know, the feline beings, the little short little blue beings. I've seen grays, I've seen reptilians, I've seen Andromedans, you know, Pleiadians galore, the Orion Counts of Light, all these different beings, you know, we're in contact with. And, you know, some of them have names, some the name's not important. You know, it's not, they really don't care about identity. It's not part of their reality. But, you know, and all the most communication is telepathic anyway, so you don't have to speak, you know, Pleiadanese or whatever they do. But, you know, it's quite interesting. But, you know, I had one person telling me that, you know, she was the queen of Pleiades and that I was a fraud because I didn't recognize her as the queen of the Pleiades. And I said, well, you know, nobody's come down and given me a who's list as far as who's queen and king and everything else and with your name on it, you know, so I can't say, you know, yes or no. It's not my, you know, I haven't had that experience. Nobody's given me the list. And, oh, they just come unglued and they get all upset. And I well, tell them, I said, look, all I can talk about is what I've experienced, my communications. Sometimes they overlap with other people's. Some people that come up here, there's a sympathetic resonance where we really connect and we feel that higher connection. That happens quite a bit, and we just know. But the ones that are demanding to be recognized are really coming from the ego. And to me, it's like, you know, why do you need my acceptance and approval or me to validate your reality? If that's what you need, then you might want to take that to the next level.
Yeah, I have found that as well. And I think you find that, you know, in any genre. But you really, I don't know, it's like these egos develop a following. I'm not going to call it a cult because it just doesn't rise to that level. But you see that, you know, the ones that make all the shows in California, for instance, are a completely different community than the ones that make the, you know, your place up there in Washington. They don't come up to your place because their genuineness depends upon their audience, not upon their message. Yeah. And when you watch their videos, read their books, and you and I have both interviewed them over the years, so you get a great sense of what the showmanship is of what they're trying to do. And of course, you know, I've got a full-time day job, which takes up most of my time as a commercial scientist and engineer. But this, you know, I wouldn't say it's a hobby. It's more like something I can't leave alone. It wakes me up in the middle of the night. It pervades my meditations. It's opened my mind. It's changed my sensitivities. It's allowed me to become a much better scientist by accepting all data that comes in and not throwing anything out because of old paradigms.
Mm-hmm. I think what I've seen in the field, being on the circuit for quite some time, there is a network, you know, a good old boy network, and they have, you know, followings, and they've written books, and they don't want anything to rock the boat, and some of them have not walked a life of integrity. They've taken huge sums of money for people, and promised them, seats on the ship, that they're going to be beamed up to everything. You never know. There's just all kinds of grandiose promises made with, you know, and haven't walked a path of integrity. And what's funny, I don't want to mention the name of the movie, but there's a major movie coming out right now that I spent 2 days there doing an interview with these people. And they said it was the most concise interview that they've done after all the other people, and also said that it gave solutions. It was a really good interview, and then I got axed by it, and then they put in some other people of notoriety, which I know for sure have definitely not walked a path of integrity. And I actually said something about it. You know, I go, hey, what's the deal? You know, I thought you were going to stand up and actually get this information out for once, and not go the path of fame and money, and really focus on the message and, you know, the awakening and healing of humanity and the earth. But it seems like the Hollywood, you know, group that you talk about and the other groups, they're more looking at numbers to stay within a certain format and a paradigm. And the people that are for real end up upsetting the ones that aren't for real, who get very edgy, you know, when you're grouped together with them. And so you end up getting, you know, kind of cut and thrown on the cutting room floor. But
this might go back to what you talked about a few minutes ago, that there are government agencies who masterfully put forth disinformation. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they'll raise up, finance and support certain personalities to come forth in the genre who sow a great amount of disinformation in this genre. And so they become, you know, the authorities. They're the ones that get on TV, on History Channel or Discovery Channel or Science Channel, or even in the major motion pictures. They're the ones that get on and have the notoriety, have the fame, have the name recognition, you know, as far as the major media goes. But they're sowing disinformation. They're not saying what really happens. And anytime it comes to actually putting footage on there of what a UFO is, it's all animated. There's not a single frame of real footage that you can see.
Yeah. I think that's amazing. I was, some of the things I was cut from, some of these movies I was cut from, they use my footage and then they cut me out of the and then they played my footage behind all these other characters, you know, in the documentary or whatever. They're showing all my footage, and then the guy that's really having contact, that is for real, they cut, you know. And I'm just blown away. It's just like, God, when is this going to end? You know, when are people going to see through the nonsense, you know? And I always go, people are always going, well, when is contact going to happen? You know, it's been going on here for 25 years, you know, for the people that have come up here and wanted to connect with the ships and see them. It's been going on for a long time. It was going on here even before I was here, 100 years before I even got here with the Native Americans. So, you know, up at the Yakima tribe and people up there, and the forest rangers have all had contacts, the fire tower spotters, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, you know, did research up here. And actually, Kenneth Arnold lost sight of the ships when they landed on the western slopes of Mount Adams. So here you have 100-year history, recorded history of UFO activity here. and it's still ongoing, but we're probably the most censored group on the planet, which should tell you that it is. Yeah, you know, it's.
I remember it was a couple of years ago. You and me and William Henry and John Riley, we walked out of the main meeting theater, and it wasn't quite dark. It was still kind of dusky. The sky was it wasn't quite sundown. The stars hadn't popped out yet, and this beautiful rainbow-colored ship came in from the west, underneath the dusky sky, and flew low and slow right over the ranch. That was really fabulous.
Yeah.
And then you released a YouTube not long ago of a black helicopter that flew around your property. For gosh, it seemed like half an hour the thing was flying around.
Yeah.
This thing wasn't surveying real estate. This thing was flying like 300 feet off the ground. It was really unbelievable. It wasn't a single pass. It went around and around and around and around. And, you know, you're filming it and going, hello, we see you. And, my goodness, there wasn't a single number on that helicopter.
No. We have several really good recordings of that happening. And you know, actually zooming way in on it, you know, no numbers, black, or some are real dark green, but still no numbers on them. They look almost black. And they have weird gear on them. They have like night flying gear, and we've had a Black Hawk fly over here with a looked like a giant pie pan underneath it that was revolving with all these different gizmos on it. And I don't know what that thing does, but we've had a lot of black F-15s buzzing us at nighttime. I mean, you've seen that too. At nighttime, when the UFOs come in, the jets, almost every time you go, okay, what are the odds of the UFO flying over and this jet vectoring in on the exact same course to intercept this UFO?
Well, yeah, there's no calculable odds, because you're not in what we call a skyway. There's no airport approach that you're on. Skyways are like highways in the sky that jets always fly. You can see them when they stack up in front of the airports. And it's the same thing that crisscrosses the country. You're in between airports. There's no skyway there. So if there are jets flying back and forth across your property, they're military.
Yeah, and they're vectoring in on the ship, exactly the path the ship took. They're creating an angle, or they're flying right behind it, following it. You know, we watched this really amazing, huge UFO coming from the west, again, flew over, and we were filming it, and this jet vectored in on it, and it was moving. It was coming right in on it, and it disappeared. It totally vanished. I have no idea where it went.
The UFO disappeared.
Yeah, and then the next day, we had three black, looked like F-17s, all black F-17s that were, you know, circling the ranch, low enough to where we could see the pilot's helmet and gear and everything. That's how low they were. And they just kept circling the ranch. I think they're looking for their buddy. But, you know, going back to the you know, when everybody, John Riley, all you guys, I think Renato Longato, William Henry, everybody were out there. Mary Rodwell was at that event, Dolores Cannon, everybody. But, you know, one thing you left out is that we did an intention experiment. Before that, to bring in the higher dimensional beings and inviting them in to come and inviting the ships in. And right after we finished that experiment, we walked out the door, and that's exactly when this object came in and flew right over the conference building.
That was a really fabulous year. And this, every time I go up there, I don't know how you guys get used to it, but every time I go up there, you just never want to leave, because there's so much activity. You feel so good. There's so much energy.
Well, you know, about 300 people attended that conference. I'm not sure, but, you know, I think 100 of them were locals, you know, or family, but, I thought it was interesting, but there was well over 200 people that participated in that experiment. to connect in with the Pleiadians, Andromedans, and all the higher dimensional beings in the ships. And then when they walked outside and that ship flew over, to me, what else do you need? I mean, we've got hundreds of hours of footage of these things landing on the mountain, morphing from one to three, taking off, jets chasing them, appearing, disappearing, right angle turns, powering up really low over and over, responding to people, and then doing an intention experiment with 200 witnesses and having them fly right over the ranch. To me, that's still not enough for some reason. That, you know, they still think this is all a hoax, and that I have this host of hundreds of people that are all lying on my behalf, you know, concerning their own experiences here. And they're, you know, it's funny, these, I go, what is wrong with you guys? I mean, when are you going to wake up and smell the coffee? Look at the evidence, do your research. You know, it's still happening. It's never stopped. You can come have your own experience, but to continually say this is all fraud and this is all make-believe and this is all is totally...
Oh, I don't think you get too much of that. If you do get it, it's from people who have not been there.
Oh, yeah.
And I wouldn't worry too much about that, because, you know, Mount Adams and the ranch and James Gilliland and Eseti, everything that you've done out there is just world famous. And that's why your conferences are selling out year after year after year.
You know, we had a wonderful Japanese group that came here, and we went upstairs and went up into the special meditation room up there and brought the beings in. And one of the guys was a doctor, and it was amazing. He just goes, oh, my God. And they came in and did an initiation with him, and he couldn't see. His eyes, he couldn't see very well at all. And when he walked out of there, he could see really clear. And his eyes were really big. And he goes, oh, my God. You know, and he's like all excited. You know, it was amazing. But they were just blown away, the whole group. And they started a J-SETI, Japan E-SETI, over there now, which is kind of nice. But, you know, when these things happen on a regular basis and you have all these spontaneous healings happening here, you know, everything's that I've seen up here has been benevolent, other than things people brought with them that we had to clean up and heal. But you know, you would think that after a while, people would start figuring it out and go, wait a second, something's going on there, and it just might be real.
Well, I think it's real. I'm not a believer. I'm a knower, and I know that what I saw up there was not... It certainly wasn't a satellite in a fixed orbit. I was going to say it wasn't man-made, but some of it might actually be man-made. It's just technology way beyond anything people think we have.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had people that are involved in the man-made stuff come up here, and they said, those aren't ours. You know, I had a triple PhD Boeing engineer. Another guy was with Lockheed Skunk Works. They were here, and they drove up in their black SUV with all the equipment, you know, little tiny laptops that they could, you know, hook into any satellite and look anywhere on the planet. Amazing stuff. They came here, and they just had their minds blown. And actually, they came and testified on Coast to Coast, which I may never be on that show again, but it'll be interesting. I think it was too real, so I haven't been asked to come back on, but... But anyway, that's a whole nother story. But I think people are afraid of people that are just too real, and people that can deliver, and people that walk their talk. I think it's a real threat to the fabric of society, which has just become so, I don't know what to say about it. It's just become so fake and so filled with misinformation. You know,
well, again, I think that's probably the work of experts, because that's one of the things that I think that they do. At least they admit that they do it. At least they tell us that's one of the biggest things that they're successful at, is the field of disinformation. They're used to joining these organizations, like they join Disclosure Project or they join these other organizations, and, you know, they feed disinformation into the organization, and before too long, it loses credibility, or the people that rise to fame and power do such a disservice to the genre that they discredit it, and that's exactly what they're hoping that they do.
Yeah, it definitely does go in that direction. A lot of times they'll give people a little bit of power, and I noticed up here, it was pretty funny, one day we had some major investigators up, and you know, they had all the gear out, and they had the J-Tracker and the Heavens Above site, and they were, you know, checking to see if these were satellites or any known objects and everything, and some woman came up with her UFO hat, I mean, her MUFON hat and her card, flashed it out and said, these are satellites, these are all satellites, and you need to go do this and this and this research, and just, you know, really tried to shut everything down, which just killed the energy there. You know, everybody's in a really high space, which you need to maintain to bring the ships in close, you know, so they will interact with us. And it's funny. And one of the guys goes, ma'am, he goes, I'm the one that wrote that article you're quoting. And we are using, you know, the latest technology we have for track. And these are not fitting any of those coordinates, you know, that we have. And she just went stomping off, you know, and went back to her group. But, you know, it's just amazing how people won't use scientific method. They won't do the research. They won't use base common sense. You know, when you see something make a right angle turn or morph, you know, or light up and light the whole sky up and then turn, you know, they still want to put that into the iridium flare category or something else. But, you know, a lot of it's just common sense.
Well, it is. I mean, you're looking up at something that's traveling across the sky, you know, very quickly, and then it stops. It just stops and parks, or it stops and hovers for a while, and then moves off in another direction. That's not an orbit.
Yeah. You know, the best one was James Todd at the OMSI Planetarium, where we showed him an object landing on Mount Adams, morphing from 1 to 3, back to 1 again, did it for about 30 minutes, did all this crazy maneuvering, and then took off. And he went on ABC News and said, you know, they're not seeing anything other than satellites and the space shuttle. And he said, actually, what you're seeing here is the space shuttle.
Oh, really? The space shuttle landed on Mount Adams. Now, I've seen some of those videos, James. You know, Mount Adams is, what, 10 or 12, 13 miles away. And it's giant, you know, in the sky, not on the horizon. It's like in your backyard. And there are no roads. There are no roads up this mountain. This is basically an impassable hiking mountain only. And when you see a light, and I don't mean a headlight, a large light like the size of a big house, light up on that mountain and move around and then go out, that's not the space shuttle.
Yeah. And, you know, if you go and look at the directions on some of these, you know, 1 million, 3 million candle power lights or whatever, they'll say, you know, can be seen up to 3 miles away. Or 1 mile away, or, you know, there's a formula where after a certain thing, you just can't see it. It's too far away. It looks like a little dim little match at the most, if you can see it at all. And these objects are putting out candle power lumens beyond imagination. I mean, they are putting out a massive, and if you take the area of bright light that's being emitted and the distance, and figure out how wide that light is. I mean, some of those lights are hundreds and hundreds of feet wide. They're very large. I mean, they're taking up a whole snowbank almost, you know.
One summer we set up two cameras, two separate digital cameras, and we started taking daytime shots of the mountain, and both cameras picked up the same ship, daytime ship, hovering above Mount Adams, both cameras.
Yeah. Yeah, we have John Kelly's been up here a lot doing some research, and he has a really nice camera setup where he has one taking digital camera and the other one's shooting night vision or I think it's like third generation. It's pretty close to third generation night vision. And so he has both cameras filming the object at the same time. And so one is picking up the full light spectrum coming off these objects and in you know, high definition, and the other camera is, you know, showing it in night vision. So you see a very clear, very, you can see the size of it and how far away it is and everything else. You know, really amazing setup, and he just got some amazing footage. And one that it woke me up. I started seeing a light out the window, and I look out, and this massive ship's coming right at the window in the tower house out here. So I get up and I throw my clothes on really quick, and I run outside, and it came right over us. And I'm looking for John. I don't see him anywhere, and I'm going, John, like this. And I hear him over in the back corner over there. I go, did you get it? And he goes, I got it. You know, so he got some amazing footage of some very low, very big objects, you know, flying over the ranch just recently.
Well, I had a wonderful time every time I've been up to the ranch. You know, I work in the southeast, and, you know, occasionally we'll see a satellite every now and then, maybe one or two a night. But they're definitely mm-hmm. satellites. You can tell what they are. They're gold and they're slow and they'll roll over and flare a little bit. But it's nothing like what you see up at Mount Adams.
It'd be nice to have people do a little research and listen to some of the interviews of the people here and some of the scientists that have been up here, and then get back to me, you know, and then make your decision rather than just pop off, you know, assumptions and accusations. But anyway, be that as it may, I'd love to hear more about what you're up to. What's happening in your life?
Oh, my goodness, James. We need a whole other program. You know, we're making some progress with the electric vehicles. You know, we've faced so many regulations in the last 2 years. This administration, it's been frustrating and it's been eye-opening at the same time. Agencies that you never thought would get involved in stopping electric cars from coming to market. You would think that the EPA would be the first champion of electric vehicles. And yet there are new regulations for model year 2012 have put really the EPA at the complete bottleneck. In other words, the ticket counter for electric vehicles to reach the highway. It used to be the NHTSA, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. Obviously, uh-huh. you don't want to put a vehicle on the highway that's unsafe. You want people to be safe of it in a case of an accident. And so those regulations, many of them do make sense. Some of them don't, but, you know, we all have to comply with them. But then uh-huh. the EPA comes along and puts a regulation on electric vehicles that they have to now have a fuel economy label on the window. A fuel economy label. Well, we don't use any fuel. And they say, that's okay. That's no problem. We'll convert the power that's stored in your batteries into gallons of gasoline. We've got a formula for that. And that's what we'll report to the people. And we just kind of get a blank look on our face. And what in the world are you talking about? You cannot convert 37,500 BTUs of gasoline into wattage and then make a calculation for the general public and say this vehicle will get the equivalent of this many miles per gallon of gasoline. Are you nuts? You know, that doesn't apply at all. You know, we went to the EPA and we said, look, all we need is the little yellow sticker like you get on your water heater that says this appliance will cost you $350 a year to drive. That's all the consumer wants to see. We don't need a calculation of how much gasoline is the equivalent of the amperage that's stored in our batteries. Nobody understands that. But if you try to sell an electric vehicle in the United States without that sticker, It's a $32,000 fine per vehicle.
So it's more like BPA.
It's more like the not the Environmental Protection Agency. It's the Environmental Protectionist Agency.
Yeah. It's more the Oil Protectionist Agency.
Well, there you go. You hit the nail on the head right there. And, of course, the Department of Energy.
Yeah, BPA, pretty much BP has been calling the shots for a long time, and that's very obvious concerning the oil spill and a few other things. I mean, they pretty much took over the beaches, took over America, and just did what they wanted and told the Navy and everybody else what, and the Coast Guard what to do. You know, it's unbelievable. But, you know, we saw that, how much control they do have, and you know, it's pretty sad. But you know, we've all been dealing with that, you know, bringing out the fuelless energy technology and even healing technology. All these agencies are there to enforce the old program to keep the status quo going. They're not really here to bring anything that's beneficial or good or that's going to help clean up the planet or heal people. I mean, that's illegal. That's against the law.
Well, we've had a complete campaign, complete with news stories, magazine articles, television news, radio news. And I know this is going to sound astonishing. I know you're going to think, oh, there's no way, no credible person would actually say this. But this has been an all-out campaign for the last couple of months. They're actually claiming that taking vitamins will shorten the life of women. I know it sounds completely silly. Like, nobody would believe that. But we have such a mindless, thoughtless, stupid society that they actually believe that taking vitamins will shorten your life, that just eating the government-grown foods will give you all the nutrients you need. You do not need to add any vitamins unless your doctor tells you to.
Yeah, I know, too, that, you know, the milk Nazis have been going out and bringing in full-blown SWAT teams and going into food co-ops and farms and you know, pretty much roughing the people up and taking all their milk and pouring it down the drain and arresting people or, you know, giving them huge fines, you name it. Just for milk or cheese or anything related that's not gone through the system.
Yeah, there was a, I think, I'm trying to remember now where the dairy farmer was. I think he was in Vermont, but he was selling non-pasteurized milk to local markets, and he was selling everything he could make. People were buying non-pasteurized milk and drinking it because it's a lot more nutritious for you. Well, the government decided to set up a sting operation. Now, this guy was just close to the state line, maybe 60 miles away from the state line. So they set up a buy just over the border in the other state. And he didn't want to make the delivery, but they kept raising the price, and finally said, okay, yeah, sure, I'll bring you some milk. He crossed the state line with the milk, and he was arrested. His farm was shut down, and he has been charged with felony transport of non-pasteurized milk over state lines.
Yeah, that sounds like entrapment to me. You know, it's yeah.
Well, I doubt a dairy farmer has enough money to fight an organization like that.
Well, no, not when they have a SWAT team, you know, and they come in with drawn. I mean, they're coming into Amish groups, you know, and shutting them down, coming in with a full SWAT team, guns drawn, everything, you know, to these, you know, Amish people that are, you know, they don't probably, I don't think they have guns, I'm not sure, but, you know, they live pretty close to nature, grow all their own food. I mean, they don't even drive vehicles or cars or anything. They're very into living as close to the land as you can. And as natural as you can, as well as many other communities out there. And to me, to take that right away from you and say, no, you have to be part of our process, and is just insanity.
Well, this boils down to this new what's called the Food Safety Act. They're afraid that somebody is going to release a plant into the crossbreeding that will taint the food supply. And, you know, by food supply, of course, we're talking about the genetically engineered foods, which now, recently, they've added wheat to, if you can believe that. We've had corn, and then it was pulled off the market because, well, unfortunately, animals died from eating it. And now they've come back out with the corn. It's now approved. It's now, you know, sweeping the third world countries, second world countries, and you're starting to see it in Canada and now in the United States. But now they've gone to soybeans and they've gone to wheat. And once these genetically modified foods get into the system, they crossbreed with normal, natural plants and literally breed them out of existence. Now, if you go back to, quote, organic farming, you're going to grow a non-genetically modified food, then your crops can crossbreed with their crops. And that's seen as a threat to the Food Safety Act.
Jeez. And, you know, the food, if everybody looks at what happened over in India, you know, a lot of the farmers there were committing suicide. Their cows were giving stillbirth. The rats that ate the corn died. You know, they end up with their testicles falling off, which makes me think there might be some population control built into these GMO foods. But, you know, you look at the real research behind this stuff. I mean, it's it's pretty nasty, the side effects coming from these GMO foods. They're to me, they're just, I think they have a much bigger agenda behind this. I really do. I think you're right.
I did a special on it on my program, and I have a 3-hour program, and I had 37 pages of notes. I couldn't begin to get through it all in 3 hours. So I offered to give people the 37 pages of notes and studies that I'd put together. I had a couple hundred people actually write me and ask me, and I sent them the studies. Now, it's going to blow your mind, but they take jellyfish, cabbage, sunflowers, all kinds of other plants and animals that don't have anything to do with corn, and they take those genes and splice them into the corn. Now, that's not something that nature does, and we just don't know what the long-range effects of putting that into the human diet and what it's going to do to human DNA over time.
Well, we know what jellyfish do to you in the ocean, you know, so I'd hate to go out into the cornfield and get stung to death by an ear of corn, you know. I don't know. It's, you know, I know they're using salmon and salmon genes and strawberries and God knows what else. So, you know, if somebody had and was allergic to fish, you know, they would eat a strawberry and drop dead or you know, who knows. I mean, there's just crazy stuff going on there.
Well, that's the other thing is the cross species toxicity. You know, there's been story after story after story in the press of beehives dying suddenly, not just a few of them, thousands of them. And at first they thought it was cell phones, then they thought it was chemtrails, and now they've discovered it's the pollen from the genetically modified foods that the bees pick up when they fly through the crops and take back to the hive. The toxins in the pollen are killing the bees.
Isn't that like a tobacco or a nicotine or some kind of a produced in the pollen that builds up in the bees, and I guess they just eventually just drop, the whole colony ends up collapsing?
There are two aspects to it. One is what's called the hybrid marker, and what this does is the plants will go ahead and give their fruit as far as, you know, being able to consume it. But that fruit, you can't germinate it. It's a hybrid. You can't plant it and grow it again. You have to buy Monsanto's seed again the next year. So that marker gets in the bees, and the bees stop reproducing. They literally just, it sterilizes the hive, and the queen stops, you know, laying, and the drones end up dying and the hive dies out. And the other marker is a marker that prevents insects from eating the plants. It's an insecticide, a built-in insecticide to the plants. The bees take that back to the hive, and of course, bees are insects, and it kills them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what would be the toxicity buildup in humans, and especially what, I mean, if you ate enough of it, it would end up sterilizing humans as well.
They actually don't know, because I'm not a proponent for more regulations. Okay, that's the last thing in the world that I'm asking for here. What I'm saying is that we are making genetic modifications to crops, and we're releasing them for foodstuffs to the market years, maybe decades before it's really safe to do so. And if we're going to do this, we should do it in small amounts, where it, you know, if it does get loose, it can be bred out of the program by natural seeds. But what they're doing is they're taking over these commercial farms in Canada, in Ethiopia, you know, these areas where they really can't defend themselves against these kinds of seed supplies. There are no alternative seed supplies. Then once it takes over those markets, then they start feeding it into the first world markets, into the United States, into Russia, and stuff like that. Now, so far, up until this last growing season, they have not had a wheat that's been approved. But I understand that this growing season, this year, they have approved a Monsanto GMO wheat. And that could be devastating to the world. Wheat is the staff of life for humanity.
Yeah, between wheat and rice. And I know we're already going to have a serious problem with all the, you know, over in Malaysia and all these other countries that are having serious flooding and, you know, in the, I guess the tides are much higher than usual. They're having, you know, some of them are actually falling, you know, in elevation, and the you know, the salt water's creeping in. And so they're losing massive rice fields. I'm wondering what kind of effect that's going to have. And, you know, for next year's crop.
Well, I know last year they outlawed exporting rice, and it made the price of rice in our country go way up.
Yeah, because of the Franken rice that they created, you know, that got into the system. Yeah, it's never ending. Good old Monsanto. And I know that they even signed some executive orders, I guess, to let them start growing a lot of these crops on forest land, you know, which I go, what are they thinking? You know, that these preserves, you know, forest preserves and things like that, now they're going to start growing this stuff there. I mean, isn't that kind of a game preserve or something that's a place that's created to preserve the natural order, and they're bringing this total nut?
They don't have to go that far. I mean, they don't even have to go that far because they control millions of acres of land under the CRP program. These are federal programs that forbid farmers from growing crops on their own land. Those farmers receive a check from the government each month for every acre that they don't plant on. And that land is surveyed out and entered into the program. And once it's entered in, it can never be taken out. Even if that farmer dies, someone else buys the farm, or their children inherit the farm, they still can't farm the land because the ban to plant is tied to the land, not the owner.
Wow.
And there are lots of farmers that are trying to sue now to regain control of their lands that were taken out in the CRP program in the 80s. They want to start growing. They want to start feeding the world. They want to start taking care of these food shortages, and the government won't let them.
Yeah. I drove by an area where I saw these mountains. I mean, they were literally mountains. And I go, what is that? And it was along this railroad track. And this guy goes, well, that's the surplus grain. And I go, you're kidding. I go, those are mountains. And then the guy goes, yeah. And I go, what do they do with it? He said, nothing. And I go, you're kidding. And he goes, no. And I go, so you're saying that all these people around the world that are starving, that don't have any food, and you've got mountains of corn and wheat or whatever else over there, literally mountains of it, that there's no organization or nobody that would actually bag that up and fly it over there and drop it off? And they said, no, it's illegal. I guess it's sanctioned just to become compost.
Right, exactly.
You know, so I mean, when I see that, I just wonder, you know, what kind of, you know, the same thing when you see children, you know, in the hospital dying of cancer, and they have these cures, and they've been curing cancer for years with these alternative cures, and they let these young children suffer and die, you know, and then they have the race for the cure. It's more like run from the cure. I know there's people that have written books about that, but I just wonder what kind of society would let, you know, all these people suffer and die and starve and everything else over just pure greed or trying to keep the prices up or just complete ignorance. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Or worse, haul them into an operating room and start carving them up like a Christmas turkey, or put them on a lifetime regimen of injecting expensive drugs into their muscles or abdomen for the rest of their lives, when a cure is laying there right on the table.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, I've worked with scientists that have cures, and I've always said, you know, when they come out with a cure for diabetes, and they have actually stem cells, actually they've found cures through that system, and there's other cures as well. But it's going to be put on the shelf, and they'll say, oh, it'll be out next year, or it'll be out in 3 years, or whatever. You're not going to see it. You know, you're not going to see it. Not in this country. You won't see it come out because, you know, selling insulin's a multi-billion-dollar industry. There's no way they want to cure people of diabetes or lose that income.
That's a classic example. You're absolutely right, James.
Yeah, it's you know, I really feel this is all coming to a close. I think people are finally waking up and rising up and just saying enough's enough, and they're not going to stand by and let, you know, the children suffer and starve and be tortured, you know, with these barbaric systems we have going. I just think it's a matter of time, and the time is very short, that people are just going to rise up and say it's time for a total revamp of the powers that be and the system that we're in right now. I don't think it can be fixed. It just needs to be tossed out and something else put in its place that is totally of service, you know,
that's the energy of this Occupy Wall Street. Now, I'm not saying that's the message, but that's certainly the energy of these protests. I don't think that they're the right people. I don't think they're doing the right thing. I don't think that they're holding integrity. I think that they're just being a big pain. But that's the energy of it. They're sick and tired of Wall Street, the banks, and the insurance companies computer trading the stock market higher and higher and higher, so they can increase their profits and their bonuses back and forth without creating any value in the system. Nobody's going to work. These companies that they're trading back and forth, they don't see a penny of this money. It's all just traded back and forth between these brokerage houses. That's where the money comes from, is this computerized Ponzi scheme that moves stocks back and forth dozens of times a month to create these incremental increases. And then when it gets so high, they'll bet that it's going to go down, and then they'll force all the stocks down again, making those of us that have those stocks in our 401k suffer. But they make billions, trillions off of it. There is no way to fix it, James. There's no way to fix it. It's a system that needs to be done away with.
I'm seeing countries, I mean, whole countries now are all coming together. I don't know if you've been watching that or aware of that, but I know there seems to be over 100 countries now that are done with the old system, the old banking system, and they're creating something different. And I know the euro is about ready to tank. You know, it's not doing too well at all. You know, the dollar, we just printed ourselves into oblivion with that. You know, all these things seem to be pointing in the same direction. And I don't know if you've listened to some of Wilcox's stuff or Fulford or the other guys about all these massive underground bases being done away with. Have you been following that?
No, I haven't. I thought they were still building the underground bases.
Well, what happened is that a lot of the major bases, according to them, have been taken out. And I guess there's some supposedly very reputable people standing behind this, that the white hats are coming forward and they took some of the really dark underground facilities and just pretty much, they're saying they used a different technology, maybe an ET technology, to take these out. Some people were saying they're nuked. But, you know, I was watching this and I saw this special about this huge underground facility in Texas. And the next thing you know, they have this big quake in Texas. And then they come out and said, yeah, we just took out the base, the underground facility in Texas. I thought that was quite interesting. And it was an earthquake. They said it was an earthquake, but there was nothing on either side of the, you know, when you see an earthquake, it builds and then it has a sharp boom and then it tapers off, right?
Right.
There's nothing on either side of it. It was just a sharp boom, you know?
Wow.
And the one that happened over there in New York and the one in, the two big ones, I think Colorado. There's a big one in New York and a big one in Colorado. Both of those had these sharp quakes that had no beginning or ending, just happened, you know.
Instantly. Yeah, I was in just outside the Pentagon when that one hit in Virginia.
Yeah,
it was back in September. And it was the biggest quake they've ever had in Virginia. You know, I mean, the Pentagon emptied out like rats, you know, in a floodwater. In fact, one of the pipes in A circle, that's the inner circle of the Pentagon, burst and flooded a hallway. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Pentagon, but only the outside ring has windows that you can actually see out, you know, to the countryside. So the inside rings, you know, B, C, D, or A, B, C rings, they don't have a view. So when that quake hit, you should have seen the panic on these people's faces. I mean, they dumped out into the streets. There were ambulances. There were helicopters. There were people in every street. No traffic was moving. I finally just parked my car and walked to dinner. It was insane. You couldn't move. The whole place just went into complete panic mode.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. They, you know, there's, I guess that, you know, I guess it would be expected, you know, after the getting hit by that missile that they say is a plane. But, you know, how when things start shaking and rumbling, they'd want to get out of there right away. You know, that's understandable.
Yeah.
It'd be like being in one of the major buildings in New York, you know, and things start shaking and rumbling, you know, I would be getting out of there real fast.
Yeah, a lot of those old buildings are not made to take an earthquake because that place is pretty tectonically stable. I don't know. There's a lot of things we could talk about, James. And I don't know if countries are coming together. I think, honestly, countries are coming apart. I think that people have realized that they have two governments. They have one that they elect, and they have one that's not elected, that is in real control of the government. I did a special. I'm getting ready to do a special this Sunday, tomorrow. Well, in just a few hours, as a matter of fact, because it's already Sunday out here on the East Coast. Where is all the gold gone? In 1949, just after World War II, we had 702 million troy ounces of gold in Fort Knox. Now they claim that there's 261 million troy ounces of gold in Fort Knox. But when you do the math of how much Germany has, France has, Britain has, China has, Japan has, there's about 300 or 400 million troy ounces of gold that are missing. And that's from the 1949 numbers. We don't know where the gold is since then until now. Somewhere we've got about a billion troy ounces of gold that are missing off our planet. They're gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite interesting. I could probably give you a really good guess on where they are, but it would probably be my last guess, and so I'm not going to go there. I'm sure there's some New World Order boys with some really big basements, you know, that are waiting for things to fall apart and are stashing away as much of that as possible. I know underneath the Twin Towers, when they went down, that there were huge gold reserves under there that were taken out before the event. So there was pre-knowledge of that event. And that's pretty well-known fact, you know, concerning that event, that those mysteriously, and who knows where those went. I mean, anybody ever try to figure out where all the gold underneath the Twin Towers went? You know, I haven't heard anybody track it down or find out where it ended up.
I haven't heard anybody do that either. In fact, I the only person that I've heard in Washington saying anything about it is Ron Paul. He's the one that wants to audit the Fed. He's the one that's calling for, let's go to Fort Knox, open up the doors, and let's do an audit. You know, in 1999, we transferred some gold bars. I think it was between 5,000 and 7,000 bars of gold to China, because we use it to ostensibly balance, you know, the balance of trade. And so the gold bars were delivered, and China decided to audit the bars. And so the custom is that you drill some very small holes into the bars, you take the drill cuttings, and you melt them down, and you determine the purity of the gold. It's supposed to be 99.99% pure. What they discovered is all these bars, serial-numbered bars, that have been in Fort Knox for decades and decades and decades, they were tungsten, and they only had a light coating of gold on the outside. Every single one of those bars was counterfeit.
Yeah, I wonder what happened after they found out they're a counterfeit. Well, I heard that Chinese story, but I never heard the end of the story.
The Chinese were pretty mad.
I'll bet. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that one goes. But who knows? It's a crazy world out there. Hey, you know, Brooks, we're running out of time now. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. But before we end, did you want to, you know, put out a plug on any of your latest work, your books, or your website, or how people can get in touch with you?
Sure. You know, Remembering the Future, the Physics of the Soul and Time Travel has been out for about a year. It's still in the top 100 at Amazon. You can buy it at Amazon.com if you want to. But if you buy it at the website, rememberingthefuturebook.com, you'll get the audiobook for free, and you'll also get the book autographed. So it's a great read. It's designed to be sort of a scientific self-help book. It'll help unlock the bounty of the universe so that you can take control of your own life condition and do it the right way.
You know, I don't know about that. It might be too much personal responsibility for me.
yeah, it might be.
I think that's what it's all about now is personal responsibility, making the right choices and standing up for our rights and becoming sovereign divine beings, you know, like not really becoming, but claiming it.
Yeah, don't give up your sovereignty to anyone else for anything. Put your dream out there and never, ever settle.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Hey, well, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I'm sure we'll be in touch. And I don't know, keep up the great work and keep those electric cars out there. Keep them going. I want to get my electric truck here soon, but who knows where that's going to go.
Well, we're still working on it. We never give up on it. Every day we work on it. And I really appreciate coming on your program, James. It's always a pleasure. Never get enough of
it. Hey, a little heads up. I noticed that you're coughing there. You're probably battling a little bit of a cold, but you know, with all these chemtrails and everything else going on, I got one of those Vicks humidifiers, you know, that steamers.
Yeah.
I got one of those, and I just threw a little tea tree oil in that and some lavender and a little thyme and sucked that up, and it knocked that right out for me. I couldn't believe it. And then I took a shot of a couple teaspoons of that Bragg's cider vinegar with about 5 drops of iodine in it. And, boy, that just turned me right around. It knocked that stuff out, like, in 30 minutes. I couldn't believe how fast it worked.
Wow. Well, I definitely got to be all over that because I had a cold a couple weeks ago, but this pesky cough has been hanging around for about 3 weeks, and I'm about tired of it. I'm ready to fire it.
Yeah. Yeah, we had that same round go around here. Everybody got really sick, and it just didn't want to go away, and then that's what we tried, and it knocked it right out.
Well, I'm going to be all over that. That's going to be as soon as I wake up in the morning in about 5 hours, I'm going to be all over that.
But that Bragg cider vinegar and some iodine, a few drops of iodine, and there's amazing what that did. It just knocked it right out. And I'm not practicing medicine. I'm not a doctor. I'm just talking about my own personal experience here.
Nice recovery.
We got to sign off. Looks like we're out of time here. So, again, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have to connect again real soon.
All right. My pleasure. Thanks, James. Bye-bye.
Take care. Well, we're out of time. It's James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio. And tune in again for another exciting show. And hopefully we'll bring out some awesome new guests. We're working on that right now. Have a great evening. Good night.